Hello and welcome to another Baseball America podcast. This is Josh Norris and Hudson Belinsky recording on a snow day here in North Carolina, where we got a couple inches of snow, some ice, some sleet, just kind of nasty conditions. But if you're from the Northeast like Hudson and, you know, briefly me, you realize that this isn't exactly a big deal in a lot of other regions.
Summertime out there.
Yeah. It's baseball weather. Let's go play.
Yeah, seriously. You want to go hit some fungos later? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, it's cold out. It's crappy. It's not nice out here, but it's going to beat negative 30 or whatever it is with wind chill in upstate New York right now. So I'll take it. And I imagine that at some point in the next 2 weeks or so, it will be warm out again. We're coming off of 9 days ago, we were at NC State and it was 75 and sunny as we watched baseball. And then this past weekend, it was kind of yucky and gross. And before, you know, getting to last night, it started to snow for the first time in North Carolina, apparently ever, because nobody's prepared for it.
Well, you say ever, but it happened exactly a year ago on the opening weekend of college baseball last year. There was a snowstorm.
And the reason I say that is because everyone was very afraid of outside. it seems to be a little bit of overkill, but I can understand it culturally, just not being prepared for this kind of thing.
I think it's a fair chance that either you or I will be on the road at some point today, not necessarily to a game or anything, but we'll probably drive somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
And I mean, we don't drive like 4x4s or trucks. I drive a roller skate of a car, a Yaris, and you drive...
My car has four tires, brakes, and that's about it. I was thinking about this the other day. My car is now old enough to legally drink, because it's a 94, so it's 21 years of age. I don't think it's a good idea to just start dumping Jack Daniels in the gas tank, but... But you know, it's allowed.
It can load up on the ethanol at the very least, and from what I hear, it's been guzzling gas for years.
Yeah.
And how many miles do you have in your car?
184,000.
Yeah, I've got about 131, and I'm a 2007 car, so I've been doing a lot of driving.
Yeah. Well, so I bought my car, had about 90,000 on it when I was 17. Actually, I was 18 at the time when I got this car, so that's about 4 years of driving, almost 100,000 miles. That seems about right for what we do, 25,000 or so miles per year.
Hard living for a car, and honestly, for people, too. But anyway, we talk about baseball in this podcast sometimes.
Oh, sometimes.
And, you know, you ask me this all the time. Did you see any games this weekend, Hudson?
I did. I started off my weekend in Wilmington.
North Carolina,
UNC Wilmington, yeah, and saw a couple games there on Friday. The first game I saw this college season was Kentucky against Ball State. I was hoping to see Kyle Cody there on Friday. That did not happen. It was Dustin Beggs winning the number one job for Kentucky. You can read the full report I have on him on our site. But Dustin Beggs, a very impressive SEC arm, gonna bump 91. Everything breaks late and moves. Got to see him go head to head with Ball State's Zach Plesac, who was a 12-game winner last year as a freshman. Big-bodied nephew of Dan Plesac of MLB fame
and MLB Tonight fame. Yeah.
Not quite there yet for me. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to pitch in the 92-94 range at some point, just because the raw arm speed and physicality is there, but still coming along and more flash than consistency at this point. Two impressive arms there. And then the rest of the weekend I saw lots of games. That night I saw UNC Wilmington against Richmond. The next day I saw Kentucky against Richmond, Coastal Carolina versus Western Kentucky, Maryland versus Old Dominion, and then I wrapped the weekend up on Sunday with Old Dominion against Canisius. So it was a busy weekend, but there was a lot of good baseball, and good to get eyes on a lot of these guys for the first time.
Yeah, and you saw what, like, that sounds like seven teams you saw in a span of like 3 days.
Yeah, and that's what's good about these facilities down here. And UNC Wilmington, I think it's just a gorgeous facility, especially for, you know, for what it is, non-power conference Division I baseball team, to have that nice of a facility is awesome. And they've, you know, put together a pretty good program over there. And yeah, they were very accommodating, very nice press box area. Yeah, it's a good place to watch a baseball game.
So while you were at UNCW, which are the Seahawks, mm-hmm. did you see any Seahawks? Commonly known as Osprey.
Russell Wilson was in the crowd. No, I didn't. I didn't see any Seahawks.
That's actually weird, because last year when I started my season there last year with a former one of our writers. We saw tons of Seahawks there. They were just scouring the grounds, and I'm walking back to my car at one point to get my gloves because I underestimated how cold it was. And I'm walking by, and a Seahawk dives over my head, lands at a tree, plucks a squirrel out, and keeps going.
They might have been there. I was focused on other things.
You know, there's a time between innings that you can notice the wildlife.
No, then that's the one good thing about getting out to games like this is when you're seeing a new team for the first time on both sides and you're trying to focus on both teams, you find yourself kind of feverishly jotting down notes in between innings. And so it's kind of getting me back into my form of taking better notes and being more attentive and making sure I'm recording my thoughts and collecting everything. So it was good. It was a first weekend for me, for sure, in the sense that I'm still getting, you know, caught up on my little system.
Okay. And I saw two games because I, compared to you, am a slacker, and saw a doubleheader between Iona and Missouri played at the Team USA complex in Cary. And it was an interesting day. I mean, neither of those two teams are really powerhouse teams. I'm not really sure why they were playing here, quite frankly. I bet they were thinking they were coming in going to get some warm weather instead of Iona's weather, and I'm sure it's pretty cold in the Midwest too, but joke was on them. It was like 27 degrees. In any case, there were a few guys. Most notably, I thought Brecken Williams, the closer for Missouri, who pitched in both ends of the doubleheader. He threw, I think, seven pitches in the first game, and so they brought it back in the second. He was 92, 93 consistently, with a lot of cut on his ball, and it made it hard for anybody on Iona to do anything with it. I think he had three or four strikeouts in both appearances combined. For some reason, a bunt back to the pitcher, and I don't think they made much contact other than that.
So to put you on the spot a little bit, is he strictly reliever only, in your opinion, or was any?
Yeah. He's a high effort delivery guy. I know he has a breaking ball because he showed it in warmups, but he didn't use it in the game because he didn't seem to need it at all. Mm-hmm. He had one pitch that I thought was a two seamer that broke away late and dived at 90 miles an hour, and that's the only thing I saw that wasn't some sort of fastball or some sort of a 92, 93 mile an hour pitch. So he just kind of cut through them like a hot knife through butter. Mm-hmm. They have a shortstop named Ryan Howard, which is awesome because they have a third base coach named Hunter Mentz. So it's a whole lot of kind of cool Phillies. And if you remember, by the way, Ryan Howard, the Philly, also played at his college ball in not at Missouri, but in the state of Missouri. He might have been in Illinois, my bad, but he was
one of those states out there.
It could be Missouri. either way, a Midwest school.
Missouri, Illinois, and Kansas. It was Missouri State, confirming his baseball reference.
That's right. Computers live on a podcast. 22nd century here.
I'm just getting word that it was Missouri State.
Sources. Yes. In any case, he was a smooth little defender at shortstop. He kept the bat in the zone a long time, made solid contact. Just a nice little player. I don't know if he's not going to be a huge name, but he's a sophomore. Didn't have a great year last year. I think he's a draft-eligible sophomore. We may need more sources to confirm that. And Hudson right now, if you can hear him clicking, is confirming with his sources. whether he's a draft-eligible sophomore. The broadcaster for Missouri, who was sitting right behind me and had the misfortune of sitting there for 18 innings in the cold having to broadcast. Noted that he was a draft-eligible sophomore, but there are other places that say he's not. Either way, I like the guy a little bit. He's definitely going to get drafted at some point, whether it's 2015 or 16. Iona had a guy, Eddie Macaluso, a left-hander who was 85-86. On his first outing after Tommy John surgery, he threw fastball, curveball, change for strikes and was doing very well to deal with Missouri for his game. And Reggie McClain on the other side pitched 8 scoreless innings, I think 9 strikeouts, allowed 3 base runners, picked 2 of them off, and was the same idea, fastball, curveball, changeup, all for strikes, very quick worker, big, lanky guy, a transfer from, I believe, Georgia in the SEC, and he's going to do real well, at the very least, with Missouri. Fastball, changeup is his first and second pitch, and the curveball is just there as a show-me right now. But, you know, it was an okay day. It certainly wasn't, not a lot of big names to light up the draft board, but I think it's a little more fun to try to see if you can have a guy catch your eye every now and then in one of these games that may not be star-studded.
For sure. I love that. That's almost more fun than going to see an elite guy for me.
Well, then, I guess neither of us are going to have terrible fun this weekend because we're going to see some elite guys.
Yeah, it's going to be so boring.
Yeah, it's going to be awful. It's just blasé. I feel so dirty. You are going to stay here in the Triangle because you did all your driving last weekend, and you are going to see at least some of the UCLA-UNC series, which is just awesome to even think about. You're going to have guys on guys on guys on guys in that game. Tell us what guys are going to be on other guys in that game.
So, first off, that's a great matchup for college baseball in general. You're talking about two of the, I think they're consensus top 10 teams in the country in terms of rankings right now. But the rotation for both sides is nasty. When you're thinking about, it's going to be Caprellian against Thornton day one, and then, I mean,
Watson, I think, versus Moss game two, probably. And then I'd imagine it's Poteet versus Bukauskas game three. But obviously none of that's confirmed.
No.
No.
It's not confirmed. I'm not disagreeing with you. But yeah, and I'm not 100% sure. That might be a 4-game series.
Well, sources.
No, it's not. It's a 3-game series. Oh, by the way, while we're talking about sources confirmed that Ryan Howard is not a draft-eligible sophomore.
Okay. Well, either way, he's a name to keep an eye on if you're a fan of the Missouri Tigers.
Yeah. But when you think about those two teams, not a lot of weaknesses for either one. And UCLA being a team that's kind of just dominant in the rotation, You could get nitpicky offensively with UCLA, and there's sort of the same thing to be said of UNC, but I think there's more offense there, and there's certainly more draftable talent in the offense, but perhaps more concerns in terms of defense up the middle. But yeah, that's going to be a really good series to watch. I'll also bounce over also. I'll see Iona again, I think. I'll be the second Baseball America person to see Iona.
You saw Zach Plesac last weekend. You'll be seeing another famous sports progeny.
I will likely see Mariano Rivera Jr. It's sort of unconfirmed, though. I'm not sure how the schedule is going to shake out. But the next day, the Saturday of that weekend, I'll see UCLA and UNC, and then I'll skip up to Gardner-Webb to see Cornell play there, just to get some looks at that squad, and get to see some of my old compadres from Cornell. Not sure if they'll be using any of their top prospects this weekend, but certainly a team that has some draftable talent, and then get some eyes on Gardner-Webb. But how about you in terms of your weekend. What do you have planned?
Well, you are going to see your alma mater, and you're going to get to see guys you're familiar with in terms of not even players, just staff, I assume. But I am also going to my alma mater this weekend. I'm going to go see three, I believe, of the four Oregon games this weekend in Eugene against New Mexico State. I think, I mean, it's not decided yet. I'm sure the release will come out tomorrow because it's going to be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday set with New Mexico State. But I think we'll get Cole Irvin, David Peterson, and we'll see who the Sunday guy is. I assume they'll give Trent Patton another go. But they have Garrett Clevenger, if I can enunciate, as their closer as well. And they have, although Scott Heinemann, I don't believe, played in the series to open the year at Hawaii, but that's three guys, you know, 2015 prospect, one of the best prospects in the Pac-12 in Cole Irvin, 2017 draft prospect in David Peterson, who could have been a top, what, two rounds guy this year had he not broken his leg skiing into a tree. And the, you know, that's plenty good for me. I don't think I'll see any other schools because I would like to have seen Oregon State, but they're in Phoenix. So I will not be going to Phoenix.
Not
going to
make that commute?
No. I hear it's a brutal commute. Huh. I guess I could, in theory, see Lane Community College if they've started. And they have a product out of there, Keenan Middleton.
Oh, yeah.
With the Angels.
Third rounder in 13?
Yeah, drafted before anybody from Oregon State or Oregon, if I remember correctly, that draft.
Yeah, athletic, converted basketball player. High upside guy, hasn't seen a ton of success in pro ball yet, but the tools are undeniable. A guy who could pitch in the low 90s and would bump 95, raw arm speed, projectable curveball, yeah, for sure.
I remember I was listening to that draft, I had no idea of Keenan Middleton, I didn't know Keenan Middleton from Keenan Thompson, and I heard that name.
The key difference is that there's a Y in Keenan Middleton's name.
Well, that's the key.
Keenan.
That's the key. That's the key. And I heard that name come across the draft, and I kind of fell out of my chair. Oh, my goodness, there are draft prospects at Lane CC? I feel bad. I was just there. I had just been there to see Mark Appel, who was a notable draft prospect in that draft. Hmm. I think if I have my years correct.
Yep.
So I'd seen them and Jake Reed and that series, another notable guy. Oh, my goodness, there was another talent right under my nose. Mm-hmm. So sue me. But anyway, I'm going to go see those guys this weekend, and there's going to be a couple other projects that really don't relate to necessarily college baseball. I'm going to go to Linfield College, which is in McMinnville, Oregon, and I'm going to interview their manager, noted former Yankees third baseman Scott Brosius, who has one of the more enviable resumes of just about any person in baseball right now, even especially considering he's 48 years old. He's a three-time World Series champion, a World Series MVP, an All-Star, a Gold Glover. He was the Coach of the Year, I believe two-time Coach of the Year for USA Baseball. Coached the 15 U teams in 2011 and 12, which teams that featured Addison Russell.
He also did coach an 18U team at one point.
I believe so, yes. Yeah. I might be screwed up. It might be the 18U teams. Either way, Addison Russell, Joey Gallo, the aforementioned Cole Irvin, Chris Oakey, mm-hmm. A ton of other guys. Carson Sands was in there. Mm-hmm. A ton of guys. And
I believe Zach Collins?
Yes.
Yeah.
And moreover, he's the coach at Linfield, which is his alma mater, and he led them to their first national title or in their division. So yeah, he's done a few things,
mm-hmm.
and I think he'll be a really interesting feature in the next issue of Baseball America.
Yeah, that's got to be a little bit of an easier sell when you're recruiting to put your hands on the table and have the light glaring off of your rings. I can imagine if you're picking between Northwest junior colleges, those might be a pretty easy sell.
Yeah, and if the rings don't do it, you can always lean your hands back and point up at your plaques, your Gold Glove plaque, your World MVP, Series MVP plaque.
Yeah, for sure.
Say, you know, or maybe you can give those aforementioned Gallo and Russell a call and have them give testimonials to your style of coaching.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool idea, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you churn out there. So you wanted to talk about some other things, particularly Alex Rodriguez and
well,
that.
If you're listening today, we'll make this real quick. He issued a handwritten letter today apologizing for his past transgressions, of which, if you are listening to this podcast, you have a good idea of what those transgressions were. We won't spend too much time touching on it because, again, you know what it is. What do you think, Hudson?
Well, I think that this is one of those things people are going to be mad no matter what happens.
Yankees fans are going to feel that someone's on a witch hunt, and they have the whole thing the whole time, because it does seem that A-Rod's the biggest fish that, you know, keeps popping up in these steroid things, because he is one of the biggest fish, or was at the time, in the game.
But also, I feel like people are going to be upset with him if he doesn't formally apologize. And then there's people who are making snide comments about the fact that he's apologizing. Like, there are other things to be mad at Alex Rodriguez for. Apologizing is not one of them.
I mean, it's already talked, the talk on the social media is he's apologizing in written form, and they were talking about him. There was talk about him doing so on the Players Tribune, which I thought would have been kind of cool. In lieu of a press conference, so he doesn't have to answer questions from the media. So it's already been spun, I mean, I can't say totally inaccurately, that he's doing this to save some of his remaining hide at this point.
Which is what? Like, there's nothing, there's nowhere to go but up for A-Rod.
Right. He can come back if he hits 10 home runs this year. It's not $30 million worth, but it's more than you thought you might get.
I mean, that,
given the playing time,
it's a sunk cost having A-Rod on your team and in your organization. There's a contract in place. You're paying that money anyway.
And if he hits 6 more home runs, I think he gets a sizable performance bonus for tying Willie Mays, which the Yankees are already disputing whether or not they want to pay him, which I guess the only way to, this is a legal term, but tough. You signed it.
Yeah, but it's also signed as
a way to market.
Marketing expenditure, which is arguably, it's bad press, I would say, at this point. So there is something to stand on. I doubt they'll get all of it back or
any of it.
I mean, they may get some of that. But I think they're looking legally for a settlement there rather than to get all of that money back for every potential bonus. So,
yeah. So, yeah, I really don't think too much of it. But also, in the same related vein, Tony Bosch, the founder of Biogenesis, the guy who provided A-Rod with all of his trochees and stuff like that, his gummies, was sentenced to 4 years in federal prison today. I'm not sure if he's going to serve immediately or if he's going to have time to get his affairs in order, but that's also in the news. So I guess baseball is dominating the conversation today. All I can say to that is, hey, Yoan Moncada, sign soon so we can talk about real baseball players.
Yeah, that's,
I should mention, Ben Badler has yet another fantastic article running down the potential of the 5 best candidates for Moncada's services at BA.com. If you're not reading Ben Badler at this point, you're doing yourself a disservice. It's one of the most important beats, I think, in our little world of professional, amateur, prospect talk, and he dominates it. It's Coca-Cola, and then there's Tab, and Ben's Coca-Cola.
I don't know what Tab is.
Hudson Belinsky is very young. He's 22 years old, and he looks 12.
Hey, I do not look 12.
All right, 13.
I look older than you.
I look like Methuselah.
Who?
That's right. You might be too young to remember Methuselah. Okay, so Methuselah references on a BA podcast. We're at one.
So this weekend I also had some southern food.
Barbecue?
I don't know if it is in the same category as something like the Q-Shack that we've discussed earlier on a podcast. But I had cookout for the first time, which I thought they got my order wrong when I first got when they told me how much it was going to cost. A very cheap inexpensive meal and a pretty sizable serving and edible. So I'm going to give it a solid 50. You know, you're happy to have, you know, a meal like that on your team. So I'm going to go with a 50 for them. But then I think I'm going to give my first 60 of the podcast to a restaurant called Joey Dog's in Surfside Beach, South Carolina. Served a delicious Taylor ham, egg, and cheese sandwich.
I like neither of those things.
Well, you're factually wrong. Objectively wrong. But yeah, it was... Taylor ham's hard to mess up, but they did a really good job with it. And the theme of the restaurant is dogs. So you open the door and you hear barking. And it's so clear that you think it's real, but it's just a motion sensor. So I'm going to give them a 60 for their Taylor ham, egg, and cheese sandwich and recommend them to anybody who may be passing through the Myrtle Beach area and wants to hit up Joey Dog's and Surfside Beach.
I obviously didn't go anywhere real far. I had a friend down this weekend, and I introduced him to the Q Shack. We ate there twice, and I think he was pretty impressed. He said to me, you know, I'm glad I'm not single and living by myself, because I might eat here every day. So,
Yeah.
And we also brought him to Nana Taco, which is right next to the Q Shack, and it's a tacos place, quite obviously. He got a burrito, because, you know, he's got to be different. He can't have a taco. He's got to have a burrito. And that's one of the biggest burritos I've ever seen. He seemed to enjoy it. And we also took him to Chubby's, although I guess that's now Guacamaya in...
Interesting.
In Durham. Well, I guess... And, you know, I eat there pretty often. It's good. There's tacos there, and I have the carne asada. And I don't grade my food on 20-80 scale. I just say that it's very good. It's delicious.
Yeah, but that doesn't tell the listener anything.
It's good. Go eat there.
It's good. Go eat there. Then, I mean, that's like...
If you like good tacos, go eat there.
So say I saw Kyle Cody this weekend, said he had a good fastball. What would that mean?
You can give me...
It's a very good fastball. He should throw it. that doesn't mean anything. That's the reason we have a scouting scale is to so we can all speak the same language.
Well, I think it would be...
It's like the metric system.
Yeah, so we can all speak the same language. Metric system joke of the day here on Bogged Down With or In Semantics. Bogged Down With Something.
Bogged Down In Semantics.
In Semantics podcast. Either way, I like those meals, but...
We are bogged down in the semantics, not with them.
Well, I don't know what you do in your room, but I'm bogged down with them.
Oh, God.
I'll give you a meal preview, and you know what? I will give you a grade on this. I am going to Eugene, like I said, and I am going to eat at a place called The Jail. It's a little like hole-in-the-wall kind of Korean place. Lots of rice, lots of barbecued meat, Korean barbecued meat. Lots of that cabbage and sauce. And I'm going to give it a 70. Because
defend it. Defend it.
It's a big sentimentality. Their sentimentality is a portion of the grade.
That's not how it works. That is not how it works. Oh. I think Colin Cowgill seems like a pretty awesome dude.
No.
I'm not going to give him a grade jump because he seems like an awesome dude.
It's really good food. I eat it every time I'm there. It's my favorite restaurant in the world. I'm giving it a 70.
Well, I'm going to have to... Maybe we'll switch this trip up, and you can go to UCLA, and I'll go out there and eat The Jail. And
not on Sundays, though. It's closed on Sundays.
Like most jails.
Yeah, they just let the prisoners out on Sundays.
Let them out on Sundays.
Honor system.
I did a random Wikipedia thing, which I do sometimes when I'm bored. I just go to Wikipedia and click random article. And the other day I found the balloon boy's mother was sentenced to weekend jail, which is exactly what it sounds like. On the weekends, you go to jail.
Yeah, I think there was an athlete who got that, like 2 or 3 weekends of jail.
That's absurd that's a thing.
I don't know. I think that's a nice remedy for the prison overpopulation that we have.
It is, but weekend jail, that's like... Okay, so the time that you're that you would spend, like, relaxing and doing nothing, you will spend relaxing and doing nothing in prison.
Right. They take your fun away and they make you work during the week.
That's
a punishment.
That's such a poor punishment that it doesn't even seem like a real punishment.
No, it takes away your leisure time. You're left with 40 hours a week to, you know...
I mean, the bigger thing is convicted felon and having that on your
record. Or convicted misdemeanor. It might not be a felon.
You can go to prison for a misdemeanor like that?
Sure.
Interesting. You may have to do some Wikipedia searching on that.
So we've touched on the Bible with Methuselah in this podcast. The legal system with felon versus misdemeanor and weekend jail. Sentimentality grades for food. In or with semantics, so syntax semantics. It's been a pretty good podcast, I think.
Is there any other baseball things you'd like to discuss? I guess, have we talked about the James Shields deal?
I think we talked about it on the last podcast.
Okay.
Pitchers and catchers are reporting, which means it's the return of bad spring training photos. So we get
that's
those.
Exciting.
Yeah, we get those on Twitter. There's lots of pictures. I saw Koji Uehara the other day. And the worst are, through no fault of their own, the Yankees beat writers and their Twitter pictures, because the rule a couple years ago, they're not allowed in the complex at Tampa until the minor league complex at Tampa until minor league spring training starts. So they have to take their pictures from over the fence. So you're going to have dots that are in blue shirts with pinstripes, not pinstripes, with the NY logo on the front. And you're not going to know who anybody is. You're going to see captions like, "I'm pretty sure batting practice is going on over there. That might be Aaron Judge because he looks huge. And here's Masahiro Tanaka because he was kind enough to come close to the fence to throw his warm-up." But it's been about 3 years now for the Sidewalk Six, as the beat writers call themselves. And they just kind of wait in front of the complex for people to come out.
I saw a photo this morning of a photo from Andy McCullough. From
one of the best
Kansas City Star
writers, period.
Yeah. And it's Eric Hosmer wearing a sleeveless shirt with just like those sleeves you'll wear, like with compression sleeves.
Like an Evo Shield sleeve?
Yeah. So it sort of defeats the purpose of wearing a sleeveless shirt. But
I guess
that.
I guess it gives you an option of like wearing short sleeves or no sleeves. In the middle of the day, you get hot, you don't want to take off your shirt, maybe you got like a scar or something you feel self-conscious about, you can just remove your sleeves. That's probably not what he's going for, and I'm probably like reading too much into this, but that's my take.
Maybe, maybe not. We'll have to do some digging.
Well, JJ's going to Arizona this year so for spring training, so I'll have him ask Hosmer what's the deal with his sleeve look.
Sounds good.
And with that audible yawn,
I guess we could talk about Kanye West.
Oh, you like Kanye West, so expand upon that.
I think he's doing it right.
All right. I, being much older than you, remember when he was just coming out, when Through the Wire started to hit, or even before that, when the I'm Good mixtape came out, and he started getting placements on big names. The three beat placements he landed on Jay-Z's The Blueprint, which, if you remember, dropped on September 11th, 2001, which was just kind of an interesting footnote in the history of rap music. Macy Gray had an album that day, too. But in any case, he landed H to the Izzo was on that one, Heart of the City, which you also heard later in a Buick commercial, if I remember correctly, and Girls, Girls, Girls was also a Kanye West production. He'd had Ghost Productions before that, and he'd done stuff with Twista and guys from Chicago, but that was really his first big break. Then he started moving stuff into Scarface, and he got productions there, and he rapped on The Hook. And then he got big. When Through the Wire hit, he really started to blow up, and that album was good top to bottom. It was the era of the Chipmunk Soul sample, which he kind of brought back. And then the next album, Late Registration, he kind of moved away from that and he worked with the producer John Brion, who had worked with Fiona Apple, among others, and kind of got into a more darker orchestral sound. And it kind of evolve from there into what you hear today, from the weird periods that were 808 Heartbreak, which is just auto-tune and really weird bass drums that are used primarily in the South, to the stuff he does today, which I think, you know, My Dark Twisted Fantasy was interesting. It was really, it was a mature sound, I thought, for Kanye West. And there were some really good, sneaky good samples, like the riff from Iron Man that he used in one of the tracks that I can't remember what it's called at this point. But his rapping has gone downhill, I thought.
Oh.
It just bar for bar, I think it's gotten worse. As he's gotten bigger and he's gotten, his ego has gotten the better of himself. He's gotten to that phase where instead of making a joke on a rap track, he'll just make a reference. He'll just set up a punchline and then make a reference. Just with one word will be the punchline. And I think that's kind of lazy rapping, and it's predominant. It's kind of the Lil Wayne approach to punchlines in rap. I'm a hardcore rap fan, if you can tell.
Yeah, I don't have that refined of a taste, but I remember Yeezus dropped during Perfect Game National in 2013. And so that became to and from hotel listening music. And then that sort of dominated the 2013 summer for me and inspired me to go back and listen to pretty much every album he had put out in the previous decade, you know, kind of starting with the College Dropout movie, Late Registration. For a while, 808s is probably my favorite.
I can't, it's unlistenable to me.
That's the fact, just, again, objectively wrong.
I don't like auto-tune and I don't like 808 drums, so that kind of didn't really appeal to me.
I mean, lyrically, though.
It's bad.
I disagree.
It's bottom of the barrel bad.
There's, my favorite song on that album is Pinocchio Story, which is the very last song, which is just a live freestyle.
Freestyle in the sense of free association or just a freestyle as in there's no topic? Because those are two.
Free association. Right. But there is a developed story throughout it, and it's 6 minutes long. It's very good.
If you want to go listen to a real freestyle, a real good, not the sense of free association. If you want to do that, go listen to the various Eminem shows on Westwood One from back in the day. A really good, no particular topic rap. Go listen to No Omega by Rakim. I think it's 88 bars where he just goes without much of a chorus until the very end. And it's some of the best technical rhyming you'll hear on record, period. He was the best. He is the best to ever do it. He's the greatest of all time. And it's one of my proudest moments that I got to interview him in New Jersey when I do a lot of sports stuff, but they sent me 1 year to cover Poor Righteous Teachers, Rakim, Brand Nubian, and I believe there was one other band there at a show at the Trenton Armory in the December. And I remember going into the room where Rakim was, and he was late to the show, and it looked like he was going to stiff me on the interview. And his manager brought me into that room, and it was loud, and there was a lot of smoke and everything. And at one point, you know, I went to approach him, and I turned on my tape recorder, and Rakim just goes, quiet. And then all of a sudden, you went from a party to you can hear a pin drop while he was speaking.
Wow.
It was great. I think Brand Nubian refused to talk to me because of something one of our other writers had written about their kind of reputation beforehand. But that was one of the coolest experiences of my life. Outside of baseball. There's another good rap story I can tell on a different podcast.
Yeah, we need to get this thing over with, especially if we haven't talked about baseball
but that's,
in 15
that's okay.
minutes.
That's okay. That's okay.
We'll see. We'll see if we get hate mail. But yeah, sure. Send us an email if you hate us. We'll probably delete it. But if you love us, you know, send us email, or, money, you know, whatever.
No, don't send us money.
Don't.
Our handles on Twitter, I'm at jnorris427, he's at Hudson Belinsky. I'm a picture of a badger, he's a picture of Bo Belinsky. And our emails, mine's joshnorris@baseballamerica.com, and...
You can get me at, public one would be hbelinsky@theenthusiastnetwork.com.
Okay, so for Hudson Belinsky, this is Josh Norris saying thank you for the download.
Bye.